This is Band Central Radio's podcast. On today's show, we celebrate Memorial Day and people doing good in the world, showing up for others like our soldiers, first responders, and folks like that. On the show today is Jason Patlis. He is the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk, and those guys are showing up to help save the oceans and save marine wildlife. They're doing some good things. In fact, they're doing some great things. Also joining our co-host and still sheltering in place, Rob Fried. And we're going to talk about music and healing and what it means to do things virtually to help some folks recovering and surviving cancer. And how does music translate into making their lives more manageable and even a little better? I'm excited for the show. The conversations were fantastic. As we weather the storm and think about how to survive the pandemic, it's great to find content that you can get into and learn things about. And I'm not saying that this is the be-all and the end-all, but if you stick with us and you listen to this show, I think we're going to take you to places. So check out Band Central Radio's Memorial Day podcast on WPKN's podcast site. We think you're going to like it. You found us. Welcome. It's Band Central Radio right here on WPKN Bridgeport, listener-supported radio and listening live on WPKN.org. I'm Andy Cadison, and this is a day where we get to celebrate and honor the memory of those who have fallen, those who have served, the men and women in uniform. Of course, I'm talking about Memorial Day. And we are weathering the pandemic. It seems like it's coming to an end. Who really knows? I'm terrified of the second wave, as some of you might be. We'll see what happens. Keep up the social distancing. Wear your mask and gloves and pay attention to what's going on around you. That leads me to our theme for today, doing things that matter. Up next is going to be Jason Patlis, the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk. And we're going to be talking about what matters to those guys, including conservation and marine wildlife. And it's going to be a great conversation. And then later on, Rob Fried will be joining my co-host. And we're going to be talking about a very special workshop we're producing virtually later this week. In honor of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk, here's a little group singing about octopuses.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see an octopus's garden with me. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. Be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
I'd
shout and swim about the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
All right, Band Central Radio right here on WPKN, listening live on WPKN.org. And that was The Beatles and Octopus's Garden in honor of our guest, Jason Patlis, the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk. And he is a new friend and one of the people in Connecticut doing good and showing up and trying to make a difference, not only with this amazing institution called the Maritime Aquarium, which inspires people of all ages to appreciate and protect the Long Island Sound ecosystem and the global environment through living exhibits, marine science, and environmental education, but he's also a guy that's done some really cool things in the world, and he cares about the environment, he cares about Connecticut, he cares about oceans, he cares about things I don't even know you can care about, but he's just a very special guy, and we're thrilled to have him on the show. Welcome, Jason.
Andy, that was an awesome introduction. I wish my parents were alive to hear that. With an intro like that, particularly with the plug that you gave the Maritime Aquarium, if we were allowed to under Connecticut's governor's laws, I would give you a big bear hug, because you cited our mission as well, if not better, than any of the staff at the aquarium can cite our mission. And it's to inspire people to protect Long Island Sound and the greater ocean through everything that we offer, through our exhibits, through our education programs, the conservation work we do in the field and throughout Long Island Sound and on the shorelines. And, and you said it perfectly.
It's fascinating to think about the scope of this, because when I was a kid in the East, we grew up with Pete Seeger, with the Clearwater Project, with things that had to do with, you know, how crummy the water was. What is the state of our bodies of water around us right now? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse?
Well, so before I answer that, just a gratuitous observation that you were both dating yourself and typecasting yourself.
It's true.
Pete Seeger and the Clearwater. But I grew up in Queens. You grew up in New Rochelle, where
That's
I
correct.
Am now. And
yes.
So we are New York locals. And those issues along the Hudson and New York Harbor and Long Island Sound were seminal issues for us.
Yes, they were.
Growing up, right? I mean, you're typecasting and dating yourself right alongside of me in the same demographic.
Well, I just remember, you know, if you went in the water, you got tetanus. You had to get a shot. It was terrible, right?
Yeah. So let me answer your question. And there's not an easy answer to it. On some things we've done amazingly well, and the environment is much better off than it was in the 60s and early 70s before the real birth of the environmental movement. But in other ways, in much more intractable and complicated ways, we are significantly worse. And to make that a little less abstract, it comes down to local versus global. We've done a great job with the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, cleaning up local waterways, cleaning up Hudson River. Yeah, you can't go swimming and fishing in Hudson River. Striped bass are back.
Right.
You know, the fishing community is loving what they can do in the Sound and along the rivers of this region. We can go swimming on the beaches without hypodermic needles washing up on a regular basis.
Crazy.
Or bacterial counts going through the roof. But at the same time, you know, the issues that we are seeing today, climate change, global warming, are much more complicated, and we're now talking on a geologic scale as opposed to a scale of our lifetime. And And so what we can do for climate change really is the major question. But to add to that, as we see through each political generation, the victories of those early heady days in the 70s need to be fought every single day. It does not take a lot of effort to roll back environmental protections, environmental regulations. It's just a constant reality with the economic pressures and the societal and political pressures that exist. So every day is a battle to protect what we've won over many, many decades of environmental regulation.
Would you consider the sort of climate with the EPA and all the stuff that sort of seems to have been reversed out of D.C. over the last couple of years? Does that have an impact, or is that more optics than anything?
Oh, no, it will have a huge impact across the board, right, in terms of what gets done on the ground, in terms of the legal fabric that is, as these controversies work their way through the courts. So it's right on the ground, it's in the courthouses, it's in the halls of Congress, it's in the state houses. You know, these battles need to be fought everywhere and every day.
Now, to remind our listeners, we're talking to Jason Patlis, who is the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk. And, you know, I got to say, that's a place that when my kids were little, we went there all the time because it was just the most fascinating and wonderful local spot where you could go and spend a day with the kids. And it actually mattered. I mean, I've probably been there 20, 30 times. And I wonder if it's got the same effect. I mean, obviously, I'd love to chat a little bit about, you know, how's it going and what's happening and all that, but there's a bigger issue here, and maybe it's a nice time to mention that on June 8th, we are going to be looking at World Oceans Day, and I know that's a big deal for you and your group. What is World Oceans Day, and how does it relate to the mission at the Maritime Aquarium?
So World Oceans Day is a day that was declared by the UN a couple of decades ago to focus attention on the ocean. And the way that Earth Day came up in 50 years ago this year, in fact, April 22nd, June 8th was a date put on a calendar by the UN just to recognize the importance of the ocean. And what I like to say is that, we celebrate one day out of the year for the ocean, which does not do it justice, because that's one out of 365 when the ocean is 71% of the Earth's surface and 94% of all life lives in the ocean.
So, you know, World Oceans Day, June 8th, we're talking about it. It seems exciting. Do you guys have some special plans for World Oceans Day?
Thanks for asking, Andy. We are actually looking to trade up from World Oceans Day to World Oceans Weekend. World Oceans Day is Monday, June 8th. We are going to start our festivities on Friday evening, June 5th, and we are building it as WOW. World Oceans Weekend. One thing I learned early on is the way Washington in particular works is you find a good acronym and then you back a whole policy or law into it.
So what's going on during the WOW weekend?
So we have our fundraising gala, which was supposed to be in April, repackaged as a virtual gala on June 5th. Keep an eye out on our website and in social media for ways to join. It's going to be a very fast half hour, but an opportunity to bid on paddle races, enjoy some music, and be inspired by all we do, inspired ideally to support us with some donations. So that's the evening of June 5th. On the weekend, June 6th and 7th, we'll have a ton of stuff showing over social media, and then we are culminating on June 8th, World Oceans Day itself, with what I'm particularly excited about, and it's right up your alley because it's bringing oceans and music together.
I love it.
Except it's not rock, it's classical music. We are partnering with the Norwalk Symphony Orchestra.
We love those guys.
You know, and one of the things that the executive director there, Sandra McLave, and I have talked about from my early days on the job at the aquarium, is just the connection that exists between the ocean and music. A lot of wonderful classical pieces. My goodness, we could go through an entire rock repertoire of songs that were inspired by the ocean and groups that you know, are synonymous with the ocean. And it's true with classical music. And so we are doing an event with them to showcase a piece from Claude Saint-Saëns called Carnival of the Animals. And one of the segments in that piece is named specifically the aquarium. The piece was written in the mid-1800s when aquariums were just becoming a thing. And so Saint-Saëns composed this little piece in honor of an aquarium, and that's what the symphony will be playing. And we're going to be talking about the connection between the ocean and music. And so we're doing that.
Is it a live thing or an online thing? How's that actually going to go down?
So the actual piece is going to be played by the symphony orchestra, and that will be produced in the way that a lot of classical symphonies are producing pieces now that you could find on Facebook and across social media. They're really exquisitely done.
Nice.
But those are all produced. They're not done live. We are looking to stand up a live segment, though, with kids to talk about the musical instruments and to try to pair up musical instruments with different ocean critters. And, you know, we'll do it on a Zoom platform. We're allowed... through the platform we're using, we can have 500 people join us. And,
wonderful.
And so keep an eye out for that as well. The Symphony Orchestra will be promoting it. We'll be promoting it.
The Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk is going to be celebrating World Oceans Day, June 8th, with a World Oceans Weekend Rager Gala multimedia event with music and Zoom. And just a wonderful opportunity to get into something that most people may or may not be aware of. But if they try it, if they check in, if they get with you guys, it's going to make a difference. Maybe they can throw some bucks your way. So what do people do? Go to maritimeaquarium.org and they can see, follow some instructions on how to get into this thing. How do people participate in World Oceans Weekend?
Yeah, go to maritimeaquarium.org and keep an eye out for all the events that are published. And
fantastic.
Go to our Facebook page, Maritime Aquarium at Norwalk, and you know, we'll be advertising it on Facebook as well. And it would be great to have everybody join us throughout the weekend. Wow. I want to return, Andy, to what you said on the importance of the Maritime Aquarium and the value of the aquarium for your kids and for kids that come and visit us. So we get nearly 500,000 visitors every year. And I am just amazed at the impact that the aquarium has on those visitors. I grew up in Queens. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, so long before the Maritime Aquarium even existed. The first time I visited the aquarium was when I was interviewing for the job last summer, and I was blown away by it. It was warm and inviting and hands-on and approachable and just really an awesome place to get familiar with issues and with species and critters that are just really exciting. When you think of a lot of the aquariums in the country, particularly along the East Coast, you think of Georgia Aquarium or New York Aquarium down at Coney Island or the New England Aquarium up
right.
in Boston. And those are really big places with really imposing exhibits, many hundreds of thousands of gallons. Mystic Aquarium's got its beluga whales. Georgia Aquarium's got beluga whales as well. The Maritime Aquarium is different. We are much smaller, we are much more intimate, we are much more approachable. So many of our exhibits are geared towards hands-on experiences, touch tanks, immersive behind-the-scenes exhibits where we could walk you through our labs and our back-of-house operations. And so you get a much different feel and a much closer sense of how things work and what the critters really are. And I found that really unique and very powerful and was excited to join. And what I've learned since then is that many of the folks I know in the conservation community who grew up in this region got their inspiration, got their love of conservation, and went into the business because of the Maritime Aquarium. And that's the kind of impact that we have and that makes that place so special.
So how do you prioritize what it is that you guys are doing? Because there's so much that has to get done.
Yes. So that's a great question, and it does come down to what our goal is, what our mission is. Let me give you a little context. You know, so 30 years I've been in the conservation arena. We were talking about politics and law reform earlier. That's where I cut my teeth as a lawyer down in D.C., writing regulations to protect sea turtles and endangered species. I worked on the Hill.
You know, you were a great get for these guys because you not only have this passion and this law background. You went to Cornell Law and I went to IC. So we have a little bit of that in common. But you worked for World Wildlife Fund and also the Wildlife Conservation Society, which is not a typical, that's a massive portfolio. If you want to help the planet and wildlife, you're coming from a pretty rich pedigree. And as you and I have chatted about in the past, I signed John Denver and the Doobie Brothers to Sony Music to benefit Wildlife Conservation Society back in the day when dinosaurs ruled the earth. So, and I've produced Earth Day and things like that. So oddly, I'm a huge fan of where you've come from. And, you know, it just doesn't ever seem like the job is done, right? So keep going with your background. But it's, you know, for anybody that wants to geek out or nerd out on this sort of thing, you know, you're the right guy at the right time for this gig. I can tell you that.
Well, thank you. Right back at you in terms of the compliments and everything that you have done. While we're on it, I will say that your overture to support charities by linking those causes to music and music stars is so vital because it's all about connection. It's all about reaching out to the public. And more importantly, it's about reaching out to the public who just don't think about these issues
right
in the way that somebody who's in the business thinks about these issues. You know, it's reaching out to your average citizen who can change a lot in their daily lives and their behaviors if they knew, who could be interested if they had that little spark. And that's what you've given through linking music and conservation.
Well, we used to call it music with purpose. And now we just say we want you to show up, get down, and do good. Most people don't have a way to express a commitment to doing good. And if we can make it a little easier, if the Norwalk Aquarium can show up as something to do with the kids, and then all of a sudden you realize, wow, I can actually do good in this way, well then, you know, we're getting people to kind of show up and be more present than they might otherwise be.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, going back to what you asked in terms of priorities and how we go about doing our work, that actually is the answer. It's what I was, you know, in terms of bringing up my career and the fact that I worked at these really wonderful, incredibly important conservation organizations, WWF and WCS. And again, kudos to you for getting the acronyms right. But what's missing in the conservation community is exactly what you get with what you were doing through your work at Sony and what I am now doing at the aquarium. And it's building connections to a broader audience. The conservation community, going back to the early discussion, is on the front lines, in the field, in the courtrooms, whether they're litigating, whether they're working with local communities, looking to conserve resources. It's a very difficult business because the economies of scale very frequently are not there. You're in for the long slog, and any failure can set you back years. And what I see is so important at the aquarium and what you were doing is connecting to hundreds of thousands of people and building armies of supporters and people in the know who can make a difference.
So how does the impact at the aquarium, you know, it feels to me that you have this national capability, this incredible world experience, you as an individual, and you've got this really special local resource. Do you feel that you guys can be in the national conversation around conservation and awareness? Because it feels to me like you can be. And I wonder how does that happen? What does that look like?
Oh, well, once again, if we were not social distancing, we were in the studio together, Andy, I'd reach out and give you a big bear hug. That's the question that really is the essence of my excitement of being at the aquarium. And it's, in fact, I think the excitement of all the staff and the trustees with what we have before us. because it's the aquarium really for much of its 32-year history has focused, as most aquariums do, on their exhibits, on the attractions that they offer, the 500,000 visitors that come by. We also focus on our education programs. We've got 80,000 school kids and children that we touch throughout the year through all of our programs. But the thing that we are just developing, we're at the very beginning stages of it, is a really major conservation initiative to protect not just the critters that we have in our facility, but to protect the wildlife in the wild where we find them in nature. And for us, again, going back to your question of our priorities, it's Long Island Sound. It's Long Island Sound, it's Connecticut, it's the watershed. How many people know that the watershed of Long Island Sound goes all the way up into Canada? It covers New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, Connecticut, all the way up across the border into Canada.
I did not even know that.
Yeah, and so those impacts all along those states have a bearing on Long Island Sound and the water quality of Long Island Sound. There are fish that will run all the way up the Connecticut River and the Housatonic River, sturgeon and alewife that we are looking to protect. And Long Island Sound is, Congress has recognized it as an estuary of national significance. So what we do for Long Island Sound is by definition something that we do on behalf of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there puts us on a national scale as opposed to a local or a regional scale. And even broader than that, if you look at the fact that Long Island Sound is basically along the shoreline of the greatest and one of the biggest and most dynamic cities in the world, if we can protect and conserve Long Island Sound and make it sustainable as an urban sea, that's a model that you could take anywhere around the world that's got exploding populations along the coastline and really important, meaningful bodies of water that need to be protected. That puts us at a global scale.
It feels like just where you're at geographically makes it a significant potential contributor to this national and almost international conversation about conservation. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Jason Patlis, who is the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium, and we're talking about conservation and where the organization and the team fits in the zeitgeist of the things that matter most, which is helping wildlife and conservation and doing projects that can matter on a scale that most folks who do things on a day-to-day basis can appreciate but couldn't even relate to. But you guys have some earth plane constraints right now, right? Pandemic, reopening. I just saw a thing yesterday on the news that said, you know, group gatherings and concerts and, you know, museums and things are going to be challenged over the summer. So just to give our listeners a little bit of an update on where you guys are at and kind of what the planning is would probably be prudent at this juncture, for want of a better moniker. So what's going on? I mean, what are you guys thinking right now?
Well, let me step back 2+ months ago, March 13th, we decided to close, and we were among the first 3 or 4 aquariums in the country to close. Seattle Aquarium had been closed a couple days earlier, which had been hit by COVID-19 much earlier than the New York and Connecticut region. But we were up and coming in terms of cases, and so we made a very rapid and early decision to close on March 13th.
And smart.
At that point, only New England and Monterey Bay and Seattle will close by the time our press release went out the evening of March 13th with board support for it. By the 15th, there were over 100 zoos and aquariums around the country that had closed. And so it happened incredibly quickly.
Sure.
Originally, we were expecting it to be a couple of weeks. And then, of course, with the governor's prescriptions, that it was extended through the end of April and then, of course, through now the end of May. And we'll be lucky if we can open in sometime June. And it's been really, it's been extraordinarily difficult for us, as you might imagine.
Of course.
We don't have revenues coming in. And yet, unlike other cultural institutions, unlike museums and other facilities, we have animals that need to stay alive, that need to be fed, that need to be cared for. And our animal husbandry team needs to be on the payroll. They need to be coming into the aquarium every day, 7 days a week. We need our physical plant and all our life support systems to be fully operational. And so even though we're closed and the public doesn't see it, we are incredibly active behind the scenes, and that is still costing us significant amounts of money when we don't have revenues coming in.
Right. So for anybody that wants to do good to help the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk continue to care for their treasure trove of living beings, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, God, Andy, I'm gonna before the end of this interview, again, if we were in person, you'd have a handful of cracked ribs because I'm going to keep reaching over the mic.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, Jason. It's a pleasure.
For you to make a plug for
it. Yeah, funny.
It's a pleasure.
So seriously, though, your guys are on a mission. How can people help? It's really important.
We really are struggling financially. You know, the board has been extraordinarily generous. We've had a lot of wonderful support from the community, from our members, from folks on who subscribe to our emails. But more is needed. We're a $12 million a year organization. And, so that's roughly $1 million a year, a month. And
right.
And we're having zero revenues coming in from visitors. So how can folks contribute? The easiest way on radio is just to go to our website and look for how to support us. And on the front page, maritimeaquarium.org. And we have a special emergency response fund set up just for helping us through this particularly challenging period. We just concluded a wonderful one-to-one match where the board had given us some seed money last month of $75,000. So any contributions coming in was matched one-to-one against that. We just hit that earlier this week. So now we are going to stand up another matching challenge. And so folks who give will still have their dollars double an impact with what we can leverage from board support. So please, by all means, maritimeaquarium.org, and you'll see everything on our homepage. And that's not just how to support us, but it's how to engage with us. The other big thing, you asked how we're doing and what we're doing. So even again, on day one, when we announced we were closing, my education director reached out to the mayor of Norwalk and his counterpart in the school system. And we've been working with Norwalk Public Schools and public schools throughout the region on distance learning and education programs. And then we've stood up a public set of programs for families who have kids at home, kids ranging from toddler age all the way up to high school senior. So we've got programs that include book readings all the way up to citizen science and global climate change seminars. And all of those are free. Again, we ask for a donation. But we have reached over, since we've been doing this for about 2 months, we've reached 39 states around the country. So again, back to what we were saying earlier, we are migrating from a local regional institution to a national institution. 39 states, half of Canada, several countries in Europe have all participated in our programs. Through the education programs, the distance learning, we've reached 140 different school programs, 11 states. All told, we've reached about 10,000 kids over the 2 months. And then we've got a very active social media presence, primarily on Facebook, but on some of the other platforms as well.
You guys have a very active social following. He told me it was around 100,000, if not more, which is pretty good these days. How do you keep people tuned in? Obviously, there's a lot of noise out there right now. How can we, part of what we wanted to do today is really get the message out, connect to the listeners, to the folks that tune into PKN, but at the same time, really use our show and our ability to reach and engage listeners to be able to amplify your message. What are we thinking in terms of the opening or the closing or the staying shuttered?
So the governor is, is, I think, being very deliberate, very careful, and certainly very meticulous in how he goes about reopening, working with an advisory group of experts, taking a lot of input from the community. We have been providing that input as well. So today, in fact, is the first wave of openings, and it involves some retail stores. It does involve outdoor spaces, outdoor seating and restaurants. Our colleagues up at Beardsley Zoo and Mystic Aquarium are allowed to open their outdoor spaces as of today. And I know Mystic is doing it, I believe, tomorrow and Beardsley June 1st. Unfortunately, we don't have the outdoor spaces at the Maritime Aquarium. So we are hoping that we will be included in the second phase of reopening, which will include additional indoor spaces. And we're hoping that that will come sometime in mid-June to late June. But in anticipation of that, we have stood up a very detailed, very comprehensive plan for reopening that really ensures as much as possible, as much as humanly possible, the safety and the hygiene and the well-being of our guests. So I'll give you a sense of what that looks like. Timed admission. When you think of the big exhibits down at the museums in Manhattan, you want to control crowds, you do timed admissions. We will be doing timed admission to ensure that we can control the density, the population density, and crowd flow inside the aquarium.
Similar to my cockamamie Trader Joe's, but different. But
well, here's the
I've
thing:
had issues with Trader Joe's.
Yeah, but you need to wait outside of Trader Joe's, right? Trader Joe's, or do you pick up?
Yeah, I'm getting COVID on the line. This is my thing. I'm out there. People are banging into me. It's great. Keep me. And I'm not saying at all. I'm making a joke. But the truth is then you get in there and it's empty. But on the line, it's a free for all.
Yeah, but we won't. We want to avoid lines by having timed entrance. So, for example, you buy a ticket, right? You buy a ticket. It's for 9:30, 9:45. Don't be late. But you're in at that time. We manage to
show
the crowd.
Up on time.
Right, 10 o'clock. You know, you get in. You get a ticket for 10:30, etc. Tickets purchased online, so that there's very little physical contact with ticketing. All you need to do is show a scanned ticket as you enter. No paper exchanging hands, no touching, none of that. And then one-way flow of traffic through the aquarium. Like, and again, you are seeing that in some of the box stores and some of the supermarkets.
It's really worth considering the following. The Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk is a gem. And people who don't know about it or haven't really experienced it, you don't have to go far to have just an incredible day that's not only enjoyable for you or the kids or your family and some level grandkids, but you're also doing good. So for us, it's a show up, do good proposition, and you don't have to go that far. And people need to know that there is a treasure here in Fairfield that needs to be taken advantage of, supported through this time, and then embraced fully once the, you know, things start to reopen. And I just wonder, for the remainder of the year, how can people team up with you guys in terms of your mission? What can people put in their consciousness right now that can really matter to you?
Ah, well, you know, thank you again. And yet another hug. You know, I mean, to be honest, so certainly enjoy the aquarium with everything we offer online. If you've got kids, take advantage of the virtual programming that we've got. We've gotten a lot of great testimonials and reviews. And as I mentioned, we've got people from across the country, 40 states, almost 40 states having joined and participated in those events. And then we've got multiple offerings all day long through Facebook with live Q&A at 3 p.m. and other postings that we're doing in the morning and midday. All on different species, different aspects of the aquarium. And so enjoy it. And, you know, recognize, even if you can't come by to visit, there are still ways to engage and enjoy what we have to show and tell. The bigger need, of course, is dollars. And I know people are hurting. And it's not an easy time for sure. But to the extent somebody's got a generous spirit and a philanthropic mindset, think of the Maritime Aquarium for everything we offer. You know, and it's not just what people pay when they purchase a ticket, it's to come and visit. It's if they join as a member, that membership supports us all year long because those member dollars are supporting all of the conservation work we were talking about earlier, all of our education programming. The dollars through the ticket support what our facilities offer. But the member dollars and the donation dollars support all of the behind the scenes and all of our other elements beyond the exhibits that people enjoy.
Well, listen, I think that for June 8th, World Oceans Day, everybody should become a member of the Maritime Aquarium. I think I used to be, but I'm going to re-sign up as a member for us at Band Central. This is the perfect recipe. This is why we do what we do. And Jason, I can't thank you enough. Our guest has been Jason Patlas, the president and CEO of the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk. Any last words or parting wisdom, my new friend?
Oh, my goodness. My parting words are just to reciprocate the very deep and heartfelt thank you to you and Rob and the team at Band Central for everything that you are doing, Andy. And it's not just broadcasting and telling these great stories on the radio show. And it's not just putting together great concerts that would have been next week, but we'll have in the future. But it's even just supporting us with the contributions that you guys have made. And yes, all of the listeners should know that Band Central was among the donors early on in this that contributed to that matching grants achievement that I mentioned earlier. And, you know, what you're doing to highlight the Maritime Aquarium, to highlight other really worthy causes in Fairfield County in Connecticut, is just so, so important. So final words and just a big shout out to you and Rob and the whole team at Band Central. Thank you.
Thanks again to Jason Patlas from the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk. Joining me next, my co-host, sheltering in place from parts unknown, Rob Fried. But first, here's a track that makes me feel like summer. It makes me happy. First made famous by Skynyrd, performed by Eric Clapton. Here's J.J. Cale's version of Call Me the Breeze. Welcome back to Band Central Radio right here on WPKN 89.5, listening live on WPKN.org. Andy Cattison with you on Memorial Day with my usual partner in crime and co-host who is still at Parts Unknown. We are joined now by Mr. Rob Fried. Yo, Rob.
Andy, great to connect with you, man.
It's
How's
great.
How's you doing on this lovely Monday, celebrating our veterans and
Yeah, I'm good. You know,
and the beginning of summer, right?
It is the beginning of summer, and you know, I have one of those heads that if I go out in the sun for like 5 minutes, you can pretty much bet I'm going to get a basal cell. That's what happens to me. I just have. I don't know what it is. I'm not out in the sun nearly enough to have things happen like that for me, and yet here we are. So I'm in a dark room. Imagine me in the radio station doing – lights are low, you know, blinds are drawn, and I'm comfortable with that. It's cool. Yeah, I might as well be a vampire.
But you've got a change in your life coming because – you need to get outside more because you have a dog. You are the new owner of a dog.
I do have a dog. I have a Thunder Buddy. This dog, so I have gotten a puppy, a Lhasa Apso puppy. His name, wait for it, drum roll, video conferencing software. My dog is named Zoom.
So you'll never forget the time period in which you got that dog.
It will
always be, because nobody knew about Zoom. Hardly anybody knew about Zoom prior to the spring of 2020, right?
Yeah, I mean, people that were living in a cave didn't know about Zoom. But let me tell you, this guy, it's a time capsule. It's a canine time capsule.
And how are you guys getting along?
He's fantastic. He's my Thunder Buddy. You know, I've been solo since August, and it's been alternately okay and somewhat weird to be going through COVID alone. And I know we've talked about it with listeners, but I'm one of the only people I know that really isn't around a significant other or kids. And I know a lot of people are probably in my boat. So getting a little guy, he's just 5 months old now, to be able to wake up and go, "Hey, where's Zoom? And let's go out for a walk." And
right,
you know,
we don't have to call him a therapy dog, but he's a therapy dog.
Yeah, so it's been pretty cool, actually, and I highly recommend it. You know,
well, that's great. That, you know, and it's funny, you know, naming it Zoom. I mean, Zoom is clearly one of the winners here.
Zoom is a winner.
But you know, like, and it's just so interesting. The, you know, some companies, some organizations, some products have really become winners in the post-COVID environment, and obviously, you know, others have become losers. I would also think that the company where you're working, you know, Topperson, that's producing the wonderful creams that that provide pain relief, and how it was pretty cool that under your guidance, they've been moving more and more to an online presence, just in time to have sales start to peak up. So, you know, another
we've been running a promotion. Go ahead. Sorry, you were going to throw me a prop.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like you know, thanks to you, Topperson is also in the list of companies that are being winners in this environment.
Think about any company that sells product in a store. Lately, it's been a complete and total nightmare. Add to that what's going on with the charities, and there is a whole perfect storm of badness going on. You know, it's a little crazy what's gone on with our nonprofits and how their landscape has changed. Think about going and buying something at a CVS or a Rite Aid, whatever, Walmart, Whole Foods. But, you know, what is it like for companies who have dedicated themselves to changing the conversation around giving, who can't support themselves because any activity that they normally would have done to help themselves raise money for their venture and their platform is basically something they can't do right now, except for virtual.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the biggest villain in all of this is for nonprofits is the fact that every year they start at zero and have to raise money every year. We're a for-profit company, you know, and I'm not saying all for-profits, but they have, you know, they retain some earnings. They have some equity. They can borrow money, you know, and every year is not a new quest to raise money. So that makes what you just said about, wow. So we can't do live events. We can't do our golf outings and our galas.
Our food walk.
our food walks, it makes it really challenging for them to raise that money that they need every year to keep to serve their clients.
So one of the things I know you've been working on behind the scenes is to actually consult for a ton of the nonprofits that we work with just to try to help them figure out how they're going to piece that together. And one of the reasons why you're so good about that is because you were employee number 7 at Bridgewater. And so you have a brain that's not only this incredible musician, music director, and visionary, but you also are wired to kind of deal with the level of planning, probability, to really bring that level of consultant brain to these, you know, smaller ventures that really could use some incredible insight and guidance right now.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, that's right. You know, over three decades of traveling around the world helping investors with their strategies is very similar to the types of decision making, you know, that you need to make as a leader of an organization. And so, yeah, we do view it that in addition to providing, you know, the live music, which is the main thing we do, you know, provide live music events and use those to help raise money, we provide guidance. And, you know, and it's kind of like almost like we're like a shadow board member. We don't go to all the board meetings, but for some of our nonprofits, we're there in the executive director's ear, you know, with our great team of Audrey Neforis and Paola Murphy and you. I think we've been doing some cool stuff, which kind of leads me, bro, to some of the upcoming stuff we have. We're actually this week on Thursday, May 28th, we're doing, you know, with you and me and PJ Pacifico, we're doing a virtual music workshop for 25 cancer survivors. We've done these in the past in person at the Survivorship Center in Southport, but for this time, we're going to help Jeff Keith and Mission lead this, you know, virtual music workshop as a way to, you know, serve their clients. And we're, you know, really excited about that. I mean, what do you think about the connection of music and healing?
Music can do things that people have maybe an intuition about but don't understand. It can change the way the body handles stress. It can inspire. It can soothe. But really, music serves on a biochemical, on an alchemical level, on a reptilian brain level, to do things. It changes the way the amygdala processes outside information. The playlists that we talk about in the music and healing workshop, what we used to call it, can dramatically affect the way a person views their current situation and their outlook. Music, if regarded properly and with a certain understanding, can actually transform lives.
You know, it's really cool. And I think the thing that, you know, we've refined over time is being able to give people tools so that they can actually have more tools in their cognitive toolbox to be more aware of how you can use music, you know, when you need to make yourself more peaceful, when you need to energize yourself and lift your mood, you know, to get through a tough day. And, you know, aside from you and me, I think we're really fortunate to have PJ Pacifico, who himself is a cancer survivor. Who knows? This could be part of the new normal of how we, as musicians and the whole troupe of, you know, about 200 Band Central musicians, are involved in using our performance skills to help others.
And I should mention for our listeners, PJ is a wonderful musician. We've played with him before. He's a pro. He does lots of sessions in the city. And he's just one of these guys that when you listen to him sing and play, you just hear a special talent. And it's going to be just a great night. And I do think that if we get it right and do this stuff sort of virtually, it can really, you know, transform people and help in a way that we really believe can make a difference, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I think from our point of view, you know, we're just trying to show up and get down, do good, transform lives. And, you know, you take it one day at a time. I mean, it's Memorial Day. I don't know about you, man, but, you know, I've gone to Jones Beach with the kids and I've seen the Blue Angels and we've had barbecues. I think I've been at your house on Memorial Days where there's been cookouts and stuff. You know, it's a different time. And I think everybody's got to do what they can do to not just feel like a fish out of water, but to take the hand that's been dealt and make the most of it. And I know that's not easy to do, right?
And that's, you know, that's part of what we do with our show on PKN, trying to pick out really good tunes to play that you don't hear all the time, trying to tell stories and highlight local nonprofits that are really doing amazing work. And
that's
give
true.
Our, you know, give our listeners and our friends a menu of ways they can be involved.
Hey, Rob, it was a great opportunity for us to chat, to connect, to talk about things that matter. And I hope you're doing great. You gotta, I don't know what's going on today with the burgers and the pool and all that kind of stuff, but whatever it is, I'm going to be in your backyard in spirit.
Make sure you take Zoom for a good walk and, make sure you put sunscreen on that shiny head.
Okay, thanks for that, Rob. I'm actually putting on sunscreen as we speak. There you have it, Band Central Radio, celebrating people that are doing good in the world. Jason Patlis, Rob Fried, the Maritime Aquarium of Norwalk, Band Central. We can't thank you guys enough for tuning in. WPKN, Steve DiCostanzo, all the folks that work to make these broadcasts happen. If you want to check out more about what's going on with Band Central, and we've been posting some pretty cool things, go to experiencebandcentral.com on the web. If you like, check us out on Facebook, Experience Band Central. And, you know, I want to give a special shout out to everyone behind the scenes helping out to make sure that all of us get to stay healthy. And if we're not feeling good, we get better. The healthcare workers, the first responders, all the folks who have put their lives on the line for you and me. We don't know them. They don't know us, yet they are willing to sacrifice everything. This is Band Central Radio saying stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you soon.